ओम शांति। इट वॉज अ ब्यूटिफुल सॉन्ग दैट वॉज प्लेड दैट वी लव टू बी इन द कंपनी ऑफ गॉड एंड व्हेन वी आर इन द कंपनी ऑफ गॉड life becomes so beautiful and we love to live our life also. Yesterday we saw the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita and the background of how it came into existence and how the present time is the same Gita episode that we are witnessing, where all the characters of Mahabharata are practically on this field of action, on this karma kshetra. And it is this time that the need for the Supreme Being also is there, that he has to come and reveal the significances that he had mentioned in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, so that the ignorance dispels and we are again in the light of knowledge. We are again full of that wisdom. And when Arjuna was lamenting on the consequences of the war because of his attachment with his own near and dear ones, whom he did not want to lose, the first lesson that God gave him was, you are not this body. We are all souls. And soul is immortal, eternal. It is beyond the cycle of birth and death. And just as we change a costume, physical costume, and we do not lament on it, similarly, the body is also a costume. And when we take out the old costume, we put on the new costume. The soul is immortal. No elements of nature can ever harm it. Yes, definitely, when the values are there, the glow of the soul increases. It starts shining. Its celestial degrees are there. But when the devilish qualities influence, the glow of the soul diminishes. So this is why the need is there to inculcate the divine values. And he reminds Arjuna that, hey Arjuna, according to the original religion of thyself, you are not worthy to fear, as there is no other more beneficial path than to fight being the embodiment of thy religion. So which is thy religion? Which is the religion of my own self? The religion of the soul. Here God did not talk of any bodily religions. The partitions that human beings have created in the world in the name of religion. But he is talking of the eternal religion of each and every soul, no matter which nationality he comes from, no matter which religious background he comes from. But the eternal religion of each and every soul is one. We also saw in our morning session, which is that religion. And here he has mentioned that the prosperity within the soul is stable and imperishable. Nobody can destroy that. This is according to the principles of Sankhya Yoga, the knowledge and yoga. Human beings, it is the communion of the body and the soul. Human, the word comes from the word humus, and that is the soul, that is the soil. And the soul, the spirit, is the source of unique light. It is a divine light, a spirit, which is not like the physical light. And when they both get together, there is life. So life is the communion between the soul and the soil, the soul and the body. The spirit and the five elements of nature, the human and the being. Being in is the conscient entity, and human is the physical entity. So life is when these two comes in connection with one another. And we all know the reality of the physical body, that the body is made up of five elements of nature. And therefore, the body demands the five elements of nature for its survival. We all need oxygen. We cannot survive without oxygen. Why? Because this body is made up of oxygen. No other gases can replace. There is so much of suffocation that we experience. Similarly, we need water to survive. Why? Because 60 to 70% of this body contains water. When we drink water, we never think how much we want to drink. But as soon as the water level is balanced, we leave the glass. We would not drink excess. Diesel, kerosene, petrol cannot replace water. Even though they are also the resources of this earth, water is also a resource of this earth. But for our survival, we need water only. Because the body is made up of water. So the five elements of nature, the body demands for its survival. Similarly, within this body, there is this eternal entity, the immortal entity. Does that also require something for its survival? Do we need something? Or you think that Atma is nirlepa, so it does not need it or require anything for its survival? Just as the body requires five elements of nature, does the soul also require anything for its survival? What do you think? Yes? Do we need something to survive besides the five elements of nature? Yes, the soul also requires seven core values for its survival. And which are those seven core values which every human being needs in this world? They are knowledge. Which knowledge? We find in this world, the scientific knowledge has excelled. Human beings have reached the moon, the planets, they are planning so much. So we do not lack the scientific knowledge, but the knowledge that we want is the spiritual wisdom, the spiritual insight, the spiritual knowledge. And why I need this knowledge? Because the greatest ignorance in human life is ego. Ego is the greatest ignorance. And when people are egoistic, the quality of life has changed. The relationship has changed. The relationships are breaking up. Because human beings are in the darkness. So no understanding is developed. There is clashes of opinions. And the most beautiful relationships also break because of ego. So we all need spiritual knowledge. Why? So that we can neutralize that ego. Spiritual knowledge becomes that agent. It's like a catalyst which transforms the human personality and neutralizes the ego which is there within ourselves, the ignorance that is prevailing, and we come into the light of knowledge. So we are able to develop better understanding. And then the human relationship also is sustained instead of breaking up. So this is why from childhood we are taught these prayers in school. Oh God, take me away from this darkness towards the light. Which is that light? The light of spiritual knowledge. So that I can see myself in a better way. I am able to fight with the ignorance that is prevailing in my life and overcome that darkness. Dispel that darkness from my life and others' life too. So this is why we all aspire for knowledge. Together with that, we also need purity. Why do I need purity? Because that is my real identity. When a child is born, he's so pure. That is the real nature of the self. That is the religion of thyself. We find some people, very good friends. But after some time we can see the friendship is broken. We ask them, you were very good friends, what happened to you? And they would say, well, afterwards we came to know that this person was not pure at his heart. He had so much impure feelings. And so we were not comfortable in his company. So gradually we moved away. So where are we comfortable? We are comfortable where there are pure feelings, where there is purity in thoughts, where there is pure behavior. That is where we are comfortable. So that is my real nature. Impurity is not my real nature. And therefore we feel comfortable when we go to the temples, when we go to the churches. Why? Because there is a pure atmosphere. There is purity prevailing, which soothes my feelings also, which heals me from within, which makes me feel so much comfortable. So that is my real identity. When there is ego, there is misunderstandings, when there is impurity, ego and impurity are such which does not allow real love to flourish. So everybody in the world is aspiring for true altruistic love. But there is no true love. So once we can feel there is no true love, there is selfishness in this love, people do not feel comfortable from within. Wherever we sense selfishness, so the love is superficial, there is frustration created. We can never feel comfortable. So everybody needs love. And even the great souls who descended, they also talked about these values only. In every religion, people talk about these values. So somewhere in the root, all the religions are interconnected. They are one, stemming out from only one, Supreme Father. But because they went into different parts of the world, those great souls, according to the situation, they started preaching and we started creating partitions. This is my religion and your religion and fighting amongst in the name of religion. But each and every religion talks about these core values. To develop and come back to that real identity and let us be pure. Let us be knowledgeful. Let us be loveful. Because where these three are, the fourth, peace, prevails. We talk about world peace, but without knowledge, without purity, without love, there can never be peace. If there is ego, misunderstandings, manipulation, impurity, and selfishness, how can we establish world peace? World peace is just a dream. We say in the heavenly kingdom there was peace prevailing. Why? Because each and every soul were full of wisdom, were full of purity, and was full of love. Everybody loved one another, not just human beings, but the love for each and every creature was there. So there was world peace. And where the four are, there is happiness in the world. We all enjoy life. We all wish to live that quality of life. And when the five are there, the highest achievement in human life is bliss, ananda, paramananda. And we want to experience that ecstasy, that bliss, that joy of human life. And when the six are there, the seventh, willpower. That is why we go to the temples and ask God, oh God, give me the strength give me the power. Which power are we talking about? Are we talking about any physical power? No, the willpower. So these are the seven core values which each and every religion talks about in the world, and which is the religion of my real identity. I am that. I am loveful, I am peaceful, I am a happy soul. I am Sat Chit Anand. I am a powerful soul, Shakti Roop. So this is my real identity. But in today's world, we have moved away from our real identity and we have gone towards the vices. Ego, anger, lust, greed, attachment, jealousy, hatred. We have stabilized ourselves in this consciousness. And that is why there is hatred, tension, stresses, anxiety, so many ill feelings created. So God says to Arjuna, stabilize in thy swadharma. Stabilize yourself in that swadharma. Which is that swadharma? The seven values. This is my real identity. And according to the swadharma also, you do not have to fear. You have to fight. When there is so much of potential in the soul of these seven qualities, how can we lose the battle, the struggle that is within our lives? How can the weaknesses take over? So here again, God inspires Arjuna not for a violent war, but inspires him to fight the battle of life and to be victorious upon the weaknesses, upon the vices. As it is beautifully said in many of the religious texts, do not hate the sinner, hate the sin. Do not hurt the sinner, overcome that sin, overcome that weakness which is there within that person. In many religious texts, this is the teachings. Each and every human being who have become the embodiment of ego, anger, lust, anxiety, hatred, jealousy, overcome them with thy swadharma. And so fight. Fight to overcome this. So it's a non-violent war. God can never inspire for violence. If God would have given that inspiration, today when people do violence, there is no difference. We cannot punish them. Because God has also given that inspiration only. So, the swadharma, our original swadharma sanskaras are the seven core values. We are the embodiment of the seven core values. But gradually we have moved away from our swadharma and we have become the embodiment of pardharma. And this is where it is said, pardharma patan ki jad hai. It is the sign of degradation. When we become the embodiment of par dharma, what is par? What is not my real nature? That is par. And swadharma, उन्नति की सीढ़ी है. इट इज द लैडर टू एलिवेट thy self. So this is what God inspired. Become the embodiment of Swadharma and give up the Paradharma, the anger, the lust, the ego, the hatred, the jealousy. Give up this because these are not your original qualities. So a practical art of living is being taught by God Himself in Srimad Bhagavad Gita. But many a times we find people have this question, by being the embodiment of Swadharma, can we literally, practically live this life? When there is an environment of hatred, when there is an environment of so many bad qualities, how can we practically survive? Always remember, positive is powerful than negative. Positive has power. Negative is hollow. From the superficial side, we can see as if it is gathering so much of strength. But it is hollow from within. It does not have any strength. Finally, they break. But where there is positive power, we survive. It reminds me of an incident from Ramayana. In one of the Ramayanas, it is mentioned that when Sri Ram reached Rameshwaram and he wanted to perform the puja, he wanted to worship Shiva, so he needed a Brahmin. And the most powerful Brahmin in the whole of that area was Ravan himself. Ravan was not an Asura, he was a Brahmin. So, when he wanted to perform this puja, Sri Ram thought there is no one who can perform this puja very accurately according to the shlokas besides Ravan. So he sends Hanuman, go and request Ravan to come and perform this puja. And as also he is a devotee of Shiva, he would not say no. So Hanuman goes to the court of Ravan and he tells Ravan, Bhagwan Sri Ram has asked you to come and perform this holy puja according to the mantras and the scriptures. What must have Ravan said? Ravan said, I would not come. Please go. Now he could not literally use a force to bring him up because that was against Sri Ram's will. So he comes back. And he tells Sri Ram that he is not ready to come. He is refused. So Sri Ram turned towards Lakshman and signaled him, would you go? And request Ravan to come to perform this holy puja. So Lakshman had this thought, if Hanuman was not able to bring him, how can I bring him? So the expressions on his face gave this message to Sri Ram. Sri Ram called Hanuman and asked him, when you went there, what did you say? So Hanuman repeated the same words, well, I told him Hey Ravan, Bhagwan Shri Ram wants to perform this puja, so please come and perform. So Sri Ram smiled at him and said, did you go to invite an enemy or challenge him? If you want to invite an acharya, what should be the language? How much honor should be given to him? So Lakshman understood where Hanuman was wrong. So he tells Sri Ram, can you teach me how I have to address him? So Ram teaches him that you should tell him that, he Lankapati, he Acharya Sresht, he Brahmano me Uttam, Sarvottam, Vanvasi Ram is requesting you to come and perform the holy rites. We have to become humble when we go in front of an Acharya. So Lakshman goes in the court of Ravan, and as he was taught, he addresses Ravan and humbly says, Vanvasi Ram is asking you to perform this holy rites. Now when a Brahmin is given so much of honor, he cannot refuse. So it is said that Ravan comes to perform that puja. After the puja is over, Sri Ram asks him, what dakshina should I give you? What would you like to have for your dakshina? Ravan laughs at him. The one who has nothing for himself, what dakshina will he give to me? So Sri Ram smiles and said, look, at this time, I am in a position where I have to give you something. So ask, whatever you ask, I will definitely give you that. Now Ravan was very intelligent. So he says, if you wish to give me one blessing. So Sri Ram asked him, what blessing do you want? So Ravan says, if you want to give me a blessing, give me this blessing, that I am never influenced by your values. Because the day when a person is influenced by the values, he loses. So this is what he said. Hey Ravan, give me this blessing that I am never influenced by your Sadachar. Sadachar, his behavior was full of values, full of positive power, and Ravan was afraid of that positive power. He was hollow from within. That is why he had asked for this blessing. Because the day when he is influenced by his positive code and conduct of behavior, he loses everything. So positive has power, negative does not have power. So when we are the embodiment of the core values, we are powerful. Those seven core values are like the battery of the soul. But in today's age, this battery is completely discharged. So now I need to charge my battery. And how can I charge my battery? There are two ways to charge a battery. The first method to charge a battery is car's battery. How can we keep it charged? the more I keep the car in a running position, the more it functions, more it runs, the battery keeps on charging. And if it is completely discharged, I have to connect it to another source from which it gets charged. Similarly, the battery of the soul which is completely discharged, and if I really want to charge it, there are these two methods. Either allow those qualities to flow in your relationship, in your behavior, in your interaction. The more we are able to share, the more it multiplies. The more I am able to share knowledge, the knowledge multiplies. The more I am able to share love, love multiplies. The more I am able to give peace to others, the peace multiplies. So the more I give, I get. I multiply, I charge my battery. And this is what is happening in the world. People are not able to give. We cannot give love to others. We have become so much self-centered. We have become so much shallow that we can't just share. And this is why the battery is constantly discharging. And the second is either connect to the source. When I connect my mind and intellect, when I focus my mind and intellect on that Supreme, I recharge myself. And by recharging this battery, what is the benefit I will receive in my life? Okay, if I have charged my battery, how will I practically lead life? People will throw me out of the society. That is what some people feel. No. I will not throw you out of the society. On the contrary, you become a source of inspiration for so many. Because that is the real art of living. That is what Srimad Bhagavad Gita teaches us. And we have seen all those great personalities. Whether it was Swami Vivekananda, whether it was Mother Teresa, whether it was Mahatma Buddha, whether it was Mahavir Swami, whether it was our chief administrative head, Dadi Prakash Mani, and many others. What was the difference between their life and an ordinary human being's life? The only difference was their battery was completely charged. And today's human batteries are discharged. What is the benefit that we will receive? By generating these qualities in our life, there are three great benefits that we receive. The first great benefit is, the first great benefit that we receive is we are able to change situations. The second great benefit is we are able to change the environment. And the third great benefit is we are able to change the attitudes of people. How? How is this possible? It reminds me of that incident which I shared in the morning also from Swami Vivekananda's life. That when he went to America and he went to a gathering where Srimad Bhagavad Gita was insulted. Srimad Bhagavad Gita was kept right at the bottom. All other scriptures were kept on top. Bible was kept on the top. And in the whole gathering, they laughed at Swami Vivekananda that your Gita is outdated and our Bible is at the top of the world today. Now if a person would have been there from today's age, what would have happened? A person and start walking. Where will the shadow go? The shadow will follow. So instead of running after the name, the fame and honor, this and that, let me perform my karma on the basis of swadharma and walk, the shadow will constantly follow me. The name, fame, honor, whatever you desire for will constantly follow you. There's no need to run after that. So this is the secret. Turn around. Become a karma yogi. And you will achieve whatever you want to. You will achieve whatever fruit you think of. You do not even have to think for the fruit, because it is constantly following you. But there, he cautions Arjuna. With renunciation of all fascinations and influences of company, and by maintaining a balance between success and failure, stabilize in yoga and perform altruistic action, the feeling of equality is said to be yoga. And this is how the secret further shares, that you become carefree. Don't desire also for the fruit. What fruit will I get? Renounce all the fascinations and influence of the company also. Don't get influenced by the company. That is why it is said, Sanga tare kusanga duboe. So once we get influenced by the company, then also we deviate from our path. And by maintaining a balance between success and failure, and if I stabilize myself in this yoga, in this communion with my swadharma, and perform altruistic action, the feeling of equality is said to be yoga. Another thing further he advises is, yoga is the efficiency in performing action with the feelings of equality within the intellect. The intellect has to be stabilized like a balance. When this wandering, instable intellect will stabilize in deep concentrated meditation, you will attain the highest stage in yoga and the state of immortality. You will become immortal. Just like those great people who have become immortal in the world, from whose life so many people take inspiration still today. So this is what the art of karma yoga, God taught Arjuna. Not just one Arjuna, but all of us Arjunas. And then he tells about the signs of a person with a stable intellect. And he says, when a person conquers the mind and renounces all its fascinations, then the soul is contented from within and has a stable intellect. Such a self-contented great personality is Sthita Pragya. Pragya means the intellect. Sthita means stable. So then we have Sthita Pragya. Then we are able to have a stable intellect. The second is, a person who is able to wind up all his senses like a tortoise and take them away from the taste of vices like a tortoise is a sthita pragya. So the qualifications of a person with a stable intellect, Yudhishthir, that we should know how to wind up our senses from the vices. Just as a tortoise brings out its senses to perform karma, as soon as the karma is over, he will withdraw, take in, and he is safe in that shell. Similarly, the one who uses the senses as instruments, and after the karma is over, we withdraw ourselves, then we are sthita pragya. The power to wind up and the inculcation of introvertness are derived from the experience of soul consciousness. When I stabilize myself in the consciousness of my swadharma, soul consciousness, then I'm able to go within, I'm able to wind up my senses, because then I have this feeling that I am the master of the senses. I should not be pulled by the senses, but I am the one who should use my senses in the right manner, in the right way. So this is how we can become self-sovereign soul. We can achieve that self-sovereignty in this world. Otherwise, God says, as a strong wind sweeps away a boat on water, similarly a mind which is completely influenced by its senses loses its conscience, loses the viveka. The one who has complete authority of his senses is called sthit pragya. Having that mastery upon the senses is called sthit pragya. The one who has mastery over the senses is able to inculcate the imperishable divine knowledge. Then the gates open to inculcate the divine knowledge. This knowledge, once inculcated, remains forever. It does not go away, because the knowledge is also immortal. So that is how we achieve that immortality being in this world also. Then Arjuna asks, what is the path that when the intellect moves away from the right path, when it is deviated, when it is destroyed, what is the basis that destroys? God says, a person who contemplates on vices and gets fascinated by them develops a desire for them. When the lust is not fulfilled, he gets angry. Anger awakens the wrong conscience that delusions the consciousness. And when the consciousness loses its path, the concentration and faith in the intellect is destroyed. This is how yog parayana buddhi nasht ho jati hai. It is destroyed. Thus, altruistic karma yoga is rightly called buddhi yoga, that is, mastering your intellect also, having control upon your intellect also. So, very easy method is shown by God. And finally, when he sums up the second chapter, he says, a person who does not use the method of yoga is deprived of the intellect to perform selfless action. The heart of such a person who does not have that ability cannot have any feelings. Those who is not towards the yoga with the swadharma cannot have the ability towards any feelings. And one without feelings cannot be peaceful. A peaceless person can never attain everlasting happiness. That is the eternal truth. So yoga is the science of self-culture, self-discipline. One cannot get happiness with a disturbed mind. He who is indifferent to soul elevation science paves the way for self-annihilation. We destroy ourselves. So if we do not learn this art of self-culture, self-discipline, we are moving towards the path of self-destruction. We destroy our existence from this world forever. In the third chapter, from verse 1 to 8, the narration of the need for Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. Here again, Arjuna asks a question to God, which is more powerful? Jnana Yoga is more powerful or Karma Yoga is more powerful? Which should I follow? Which many of us also have this question. Do we need to follow the path of knowledge? Or do we need to follow the path of action? So the same question which Arjuna had, which are in the intellects of today's people, the answer is given by God. From verse 9 to verse 16, the narration of the need for sacrificial fire and such are the karmas. From verse 17 to 24, the need for knowledgeable soul and God to perform actions that benefit the society. From verse 25 to 35, characteristics of ignorant souls and knowledgeable souls and the inspiration to perform actions that are beyond attachment and hatred. And from verse 36 to 43, the subject on the hindrance of lust. The one who are never contented by the gratification of lust and anger, which are compared to fire, are great sinners. The knowledge gets submerged due to lust and anger. And so the first question of Arjuna is, Gyan Yoga elevated or Karma Yoga? Which should I follow? Should I follow the path of knowledge? Should I follow the path of karma? Beautiful answer that is given by God, that the path of knowledge is for the knowledgeful ones. And the selfless path of action for yogis. According to both the paths, action is a must. We cannot get away from action. Action is compulsory. Whether we are following the path of knowledge also, we have to perform our actions. All the souls perform actions depending upon the gunas, whether it is satoguna, rajoguna or tamoguna, created by nature. The soul is considered elevated who has control over his senses, completely detaches his mind and then performs karma yoga with his senses. That is, whilst fulfilling his daily active duties with the help of his body, makes progress in this spiritual efforts. So, karma yoga is best, but with knowledge. When the karma is performed with proper understanding, then we progress on the spiritual path. So how can we combine the path of knowledge and the path of action together? So it is like the combination of both. And when we do that, that is the highest. Not only the path of knowledge, people just taking knowledge and nothing in practical action, people doing action and no wisdom in that practical action, both are like halfway. Both are not complete. But when any action done with proper understanding, with proper wisdom, that will enable us to progress in the spiritual efforts also, in our spiritual endeavors also. And then he talks about karma yoga, the duties of human beings from time immemorial. And he talks about the yajna. The process of yajna is action itself. Now if we look at this first line, the process of yajna is action itself, through which the yajna is accomplished. So what does yajna mean here? Whatever is done other than yajna is a bondage. It creates a... So what is yajna? What is a sacrificial fire? Today, in the world we find, wherever there are yajnas formed, wherever there are yajnas performed, the intention is purification. Either purification of the environment. When a person goes to stay in a new house, he performs yajna. Why? To purify the atmosphere of that house, so that there are no evils in that place. So whenever any pure task has to be accomplished, a yajna is performed, a sacrificial fire which purifies. So actually, God advises, why don't you make this life a yajna? In any yajna, in any sacrificial fire, we sacrifice three things. One is the rice with the husk on, jaw. Second is till mustard seeds. And the sesame seeds. And the third is ghee, which is liquid. These three things are sacrificed, and we feel the purification of the environment, the purification of any task has been completed. But actually the husk, the rice with the husk on, signifies this body and the soul. The rice is the soul, the husk is the costume. The sesame seeds till is the significance of the mind, symbolizes the mind, which is subtle. And the ghee, which is liquid, symbolizes the wealth. So tan, man, dhan. Actually, we need to purify these three things. We have to sacrifice the intentions behind these three things. When we sacrifice, the purification process takes place. We all know, before there was a system in India where we had joint families all staying together. And in the joint families, the whole family members, they all experienced happiness. But now as the families are becoming nucleus, there is a great harm to the sanskaras of the children. Because parents do not have enough time to give good sanskaras to children. And before, when they were in the joint family, the child naturally got sanskaras in the right manner. When it is evening time, we all know, the grandparents, they used to take the small children for a walk. And where do they normally take them? They used to take them to a temple. And when they would take that child, that young child, to the temple, they teach the child, join your hands, pray to God. So as the elders would do, the child would also copy them and do prayers. He does not know how to pray. He is an innocent child, a pure child, but he copies. After the grandparents' prayer is over, they give him 10 paisa or 25 paisa in the hand and ask the child to put in the donation box. This was the sanskara, the way to give sanskara, instill sanskara in the child. They used to ask him to put in the donation box so that he learns the art of giving, sharing. And the child would put that 10 paisa maybe in the donation box. And after that, the grandparents would bring their children back home. The next day, as soon as the evening, the sun is setting, that small child would start pulling the dhoti of the grandparent. Let us go for a walk. And even if the grandparents would say, but still there is time, we'll go a little bit later. No, no, let us go. He pulls the dhoti. No, let us go. He wants to go. And where would he take again? You ask him, where do you want to go? He would signal, JJ, we want to go to the temple. So when they go to the temple, after praying, joining his hands, looking towards God, then he would ask his grandfather, give me money. I want to put here in the donation box. So the first day, the body went and the wealth went. So the next day, the mind goes, the body goes, and the wealth again goes. This was sanskaras. The purification of tan, man and dhan. But in today's world, when families are becoming nucleus and parents do not have enough time to take the children to the temple also. And when they come from work so exhausted, what will they say to the child? Can you just go down and get me a packet of cigarette? These are the sanskaras in today's age. So he gives money to the child, sends him down to that pan shop, and he goes and buys a cigarette. So the body has gone to a wrong place, the wealth is going to a wrong place. And so the next day, evening, he asks his father, can I go and get you a cigarette? And then a time will come when he feels, let me taste. So his mind also goes. The mind always follows the body and the wealth. Wherever the body and wealth would go, the mind would also literally go there. And this is how impurity has come into our lives. So instead of performing sacrificial fires to purify the environment, we need to perform a sacrificial fire to purify our senses, our tan, man and dhan. For the fulfillment of the yajna, perform action by remaining aloof from the influence of the company. Do not get into bad company. Do not allow yourself to be tainted by the evils of the company. In the beginning of the life cycle, Kalpa, Prajapita Brahma created human beings along with the yajna, along with this life cycle. He created such a process which we call yajna and said that let there be the expansion and growth through this yajna. This yajna will fulfill all the desires related to the divine, in which there will be no evil. So when our life cycle becomes such, which is moving towards the divine, there will be no evil. This yajna will purify everything. So this yajna will fulfill all the desires related to the divine, in which there will be no evil caused to you people, and which will never be destroyed. Let the divine beings progress through this yajna, which means let the divine sanskaras increase in your life. Those deities, those divine sanskaras will in turn make you progress and make all those things available for your fulfillment of life. This is such a beautiful teaching that God gives us, Arjunas, that how the need is to purify our actions, and for that, let us make this life a yajna, where we need to sacrifice all the tan, man and dhan which is going onto a wrong path. And then further he says, those who do not behave according to the laws of the eternal world cycle and only desire sinful sensuous happiness, live uselessly. Yajna is such a special process through which the aim is not to give rest to the senses, but experience everlasting happiness. In this process, the law is that the senses have to remain under control. Those who just wish for the gratification of senses are sinners. Those who live in this world for the gratification of senses are sinners. They are not pure beings. So how we can experience eternal happiness, that path is also clarified by him. And then a beautiful shloka is mentioned here, that food is attained when there are showers. Here it is, God is not talking at the gross level. He has nothing to do with the food of the gross world and the rains and showers, no. But the spiritual significance of this point is also that the nourishment for the mind, the nourishment of the soul, is when there are showers, showers of mercy. Showers, kripa, కృపా వృష్టి ఇట్ ఈస్ సెడ్ వెన్ ద మర్సీ ద షవర్స్ ఆఫ్ మర్సీ ఫ్రమ్ ద సుప్రీమ్ ఆర్ దేర్ సో హియర్ ఇన్ ద కాంటెక్స్ట్ ఆఫ్ ద యజ్ఞ ద షవర్స్ ఆర్ ఆఫ్ మర్సీ బికాస్ ది షవర్స్ ఆర్ డ్యూ టు యజ్ఞ సో వెన్ వీ ప్యూరిఫై అవర్ లైఫ్ వీ అటైన్ ద షవర్స్ ఆఫ్ మర్సీ అండ్ ద నరిష్మెంట్ ఫార్ ద సోల్ And this yajna is created and fulfilled only through actions. Actions based on swadharma. Actions are performed through the Vedas. Vedas means knowledge. What is in the Vedas? Knowledge. So actions are performed through the Vedas and knowledge is obtained from the Supreme Being, the ocean of knowledge. So such a beautiful spiritual significance is said. That if you need to nourish your soul, you need to perform actions based on swadharma. And when we perform action based on swadharma, we purify our mind, body and wealth. And we are able to claim the showers of mercy from everyone. And we need to perform our actions based on not just swadharma, but on knowledge. The spiritual knowledge, the spiritual wisdom. And then he further says, wise ones like Janak and others too always performed actions. While remaining detached, who is Janak? Janak means the creator. In fact, yoga is Janak. When I am able to create my form on the basis of spirituality, that is Janak. So yoga is Janak. Here God is not talking of King Janak. No, Janak means the one who creates the form. Every great personality connected with yoga is Janak, who creates the form of others also, who creates their own form, divinizes their form and inspires others also to create such a divine form. So every great personality connected with yoga is Janak. You can attain the highest success through action. The world follows the footsteps of an elevated soul. So this is how we have to become careful at every step of action that we take. That there are so many who are looking at me, who are looking at my actions and who are trying to take the inspiration from that action. So I should not perform any such action which would deviate others or ignorant souls from their path. And this is how he cautions. Knowledgeful ones should never behave in such a way that creates illusion in the intellect of ignorant souls or lack of faith towards performing action. The action of both may be alike, of the knowledgeful souls and the ignorant souls. Both their actions may be alike, but there could be a difference in the feelings and significance with which they are performing that action. The action of that being with the highest aim of salvation will lead to self-progress, and the action of a worldly being will bind him more further. So this is how the action may be the same, but the feelings, the significance which is within their consciousness is different maybe. And this is how one can elevate and the others will go into the bondage. So knowledgeful souls should never behave in such a way that creates illusion in the intellect of ignorant souls. And then he says, hey Arjuna, be absorbed within the soul by negating the mind and surrendering your actions to me. Whatever swadharma actions also you perform, surrender it to me. And be free from expectations, attachments and grief, and then fight. The reality is that during meditation, the real form of war arises. Because when I sit in meditation and want to concentrate my mind on the Supreme, that is when there are so many temptations coming in the mind, which are trying to pull the mind. And we are trying to bring back the mind and concentrate. So this is the struggle that we are going through. So the real war arises at that time. Vices like lust, anger, attachment, hatred, expectation, desires attack in their frightful forms as obstacles. Many a times we find people have these complaints. I wish to concentrate my mind, but I don't know why. My mind keeps on wandering. Have we ever identified where the mind is going? Have you ever followed where the mind goes away? If you realize, you might experience that the mind only wanders wherever the senses pull. Maybe during the day, we are talking to someone. And when there are extrovert people who like to talk more, who like to talk so much, are very talkative. In their talkative nature, they utter such words which hardly they realize I've said some things which are not to be said. And afterwards, we get engaged in actions we forget. But when we sit in the evening for our prayers, we want to concentrate our mind on the Supreme. And that is the time when our mind is free. And that is the time we start realizing, oh, whatever I said today, I was not supposed to tell these things to that person. Such great misunderstanding might be created. This might happen. This might come up. What will they think about me? And now what will happen? So the mind has wandered. Where the mouth was not within our control. When the mouth was being mischievous in talking too much, there the mind wanders. Or sometimes we are standing somewhere, we overhear some words. Afterwards we are busy, we do not even think of those words. But when we silence the mind and sit down and think about that Supreme Being, and that is the time we realize, I've heard these words today. I didn't even realize at that time. This person was trying to tell me something. Hardly I realized. Now I have to look for that person and I have to ask what the real matter was. And the mind wandered away. Where? Where the ears were being mischievous. Or sometimes we see something through the eyes. Afterwards we forget. But as soon as we sit in front of God and we are trying to concentrate our mind, those images start emerging. And we realize, oh, I saw with my own eyes. I cannot be wrong. And the mind wanders away. Where did it go? Where the eyes were mischievous. Where the touch was mischievous. So wherever the sense organs are mischievous, the mind wanders away there. Whenever there is the feeling of gratifying these senses, and we are not able to do, and then we sit in front of God, and the mind wanders away. So this is the war, the struggle that is constantly going on within. Where I do not want my mind to go, but it is going in that direction only. So the reality is that during meditation, the real form of war arises. And vices like lust, anger, attachment, hatred, expectation, desires attack in their frightful forms as obstacles. Rightful war is to finish all of that and get concentrated within the soul. The one who remains free from the vision of blaming others and remains in this war with faith gets liberated from the bondages of karma. So this is what he told Arjuna. And then Arjuna has another question, which many of us also has. Who inspires human beings to commit a sin? Many of us also might have this question in mind. Who inspires us to commit a sin? So God says, lust and anger, which are like fire. At the creation of Rajoguna, they are supplementary to attachment and hatred and are constant enemies of the wise ones. The knowledge is submerged due to lust. They dwell in the mind and intellect and the senses. Where is the dwelling place of these vices? These vices dwell in the mind, intellect and the senses. Thus, Arjuna, this is an internal war where you need to conquer your senses, and one who masters the senses destroys the sins through wisdom and the science of yoga. That is jnana and vijnana. Vijnana is the science of yoga, jnana is the wisdom. So through jnana and vijnana we are able to destroy the sins. That means we are able to destroy the vices, overcome them. Just as fire is covered by smoke, mirror by the dust, similarly various stages of lust covers the conscient soul. Its desires never end. It continues to burn like fire. Thus one requires to be soul conscious and instill the faith of being beyond the senses and lead the mind to make spiritual efforts, as it is only through the spiritual power that the enemy of lust, which always remains discontented, can be won. So this clearly shows it is a war with the vices. It is the war with all the negative traits, negative sanskaras, and how we need to blossom the positive qualities in our life. Then another question of Arjuna in the end of the third chapter: can we gain control over our mind, intellect and the senses, which many of us also have? The same question Arjuna also has in his mind. And God says, Arjuna, beyond this body are the senses. Beyond senses is the mind, and beyond mind is the intellect. Beyond the intellect is you yourself, a subtle, powerful and very elevated soul. So the soul is the master. By understanding your power of the soul, if you understand the potential of the soul, control the mind through your intellect and destroy your enemy, that is lust. It is lust that influences the soul through the senses. So that is how we can master our senses, and we can gain that self-sovereignty upon our mind, intellect and senses. So beautifully he answered this question also. And this is how in the end of the third chapter, so in the third chapter we find that from the distinction between Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga, how to achieve mastery upon the self was described by God himself. Now, tomorrow we shall see further of the fourth chapter and how God reveals his real identity to Arjuna and how he comes onto this world to abolish irreligiousness, yada yada hi dharmasya, and why he comes, what is the cause of his coming to this world. These aspects we shall see tomorrow. But as God had directed Arjuna to concentrate the mind and to stabilize in the soul consciousness, let us also for a few minutes sit in meditation, concentrate our attention and especially become the embodiment of Swadharma, which is my true identity, which is my real self. And let me allow those qualities to vibrate. Let me become the embodiment of those qualities. And this is how I can magnetize my own personality also. And the more these qualities will flow, the battery will get charged. The more we are able to charge the battery of the soul. So as I would give you the thoughts, don't have to just repeat those thoughts, but try to feel those seven qualities, which are satogun, the seven core values, the essence of seven core values, is my real nature, is my real identity, is my swadharma. So let me stabilize myself in that consciousness of the seven core values. And now for a few minutes, just focus your attention at the center of the forehead. As in the medical sciences research, they've identified that the soul dwells between the pituitary and the hypothalamus, right behind the surface marking of the forehead. That is why when we go to the temples, we apply a tilak. So be conscious of that eternal divine form, divine light. And with your mind's eye, with the inner eye, let us visualize. The more I can have a clear vision of my real identity, I can stabilize myself. So for a few moments, let us turn the attention away from the external world, away from the outside sounds, and just be with myself. Just be with yourself. With this awareness, I am a divine being, a soul. This body is like a costume that I have put on to play my role on this world, but I am separate from the physical costume. I am an eternal being of divine light, the master of the sense organs, the master of the mind. Slowly and gradually, I take the mind and intellect on a journey, a journey to my swadharma. And as I think, I become. The energy of thoughts create my form. And I realize that I am pure being, in my original nature. I am the embodiment of purity. I can see, visualize of pure light surrounding me. I realize my original nature is of peace. I am a peaceful being. can feel the vibrations of peace around me. My mind and intellect are becoming silent. And I'm stabilized in the consciousness of my Swadharma. It gives me such a pleasant feeling I experience inner happiness. I can feel the bliss as I realize I am Sat Chit Ananda Roop. This is my real identity. I generate the power of my qualities. These divine qualities prosper me from within. Enriches me from within. I feel so empowered. I recharge my battery with these divine qualities. As I recharge myself, it refreshes me from within. Now I know the secret of being a true karma yogi. How to perform the actions on the basis of my divine qualities being in the world. I am an empowered soul. My life is like a yajna. Which purifies my mind, body, and wealth. As I learn this Gyan and Vigyan, I discipline my sense organs. the self-sovereignty. Being in this world, I'm a self-sovereign soul. And I know how to channelize my energy, my potential in a positive direction. With this art of Karma Yoga, I transform my life. And fill new inspirations. With divine insight. With the wisdom. There is a spiritual awakening. Fortunate I am to have this opportunity to a spiritual awakening. And learn the process to recharge my battery from within. How fortunate I am to nourish myself with the spiritual knowledge. An experience, God's grace, God's love. Empowering myself from within, I turn my attention back to the physical self. And now, I take over the charge of my sense organs, and through my sense organs, in my relationships, in my interaction with others, I have to allow the flow of these divine qualities. Let me share with everyone the divine qualities. This wealth is imperishable. ఓం శాంతి శాంతి శాంతి.